So what I'm going to be talking about is trying to use biological soil crusts as a rehabilitation method to stabilize soils. And what I'm going to be talking about is a case study in Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico. And so Bandelier National Monument is located in northern New Mexico. It's kind of near Santa Fe. And where I'll be talking about are these mesa tops, these pinyon juniper mesa tops, on a Bandelier volcanic tuff soil. And this region has had a long history of disturbance. It's a wilderness area within a national monument, but it has had a long land use history that's resulted in a lot of disturbance, and this disturbance has resulted in a lot of bare soils, bare eroding, actively eroding soils. This monument experiences about a centimeter of soil loss per decade, which in this arid region is an incredible amount of soil being lost from the system. And so the monument is really motivated to try and figure out effective ways to stabilize the soils within this monument. And so we wanted to ask the question, could native biocrusts be part of the answer to stabilizing these eroding soils? Before we can really answer this, we need to talk about what biological soil crusts are. So biocrusts, if you're not familiar, are a community of lichens, mosses, cyanobacteria, and algae that live on the top 2 centimeters of the soil surface within drylands. I really like this diagram because it shows that they're a community of organisms living really close together. And on the picture on the right, what you can see between the plants and the litter is all this inner space, all the soil is covered with biological soil crusts. So they can really be quite expansive in certain dryland systems. And biocrusts provide a lot of different functions for the ecosystem. The cyanobacterial elements of the biocrusts have long filaments that can actually create soil stability by aggregating soil particles together and holding them in place on the soil surface. Biocrusts can also aid in soil water retention and reduce overland flow by creating this soil microtopography that's actually going to slow the speed of that water moves over the landscape and allow for more infiltration. So there's a problem with biocrusts, and that they're very fragile, and they're really easy to disturb them through different land use practices like grazing or off-road vehicle driving or recreation uses can tend to disturb biocrusts, and they can be really slow to recover. They can take decades to recover in different, depending on the system that you're in. And the reasons that it can be slow to recover are few. Some of them are the fact that they could be propagule limitations, so maybe just a large enough area was disturbed that there are no more propagules of biocrust to regrow in an area where they've been disturbed. There can also be continued disturbance, so the initial disturbance that caused the biocrust to decline in that region maybe is continuing, like continued grazing from year to year can continue this disruption of biocrusts. And they could also be limiting, they could be limiting resources that biocrusts need to grow. Just like plants, biocrusts need nutrients within the soil, and those could be limiting in certain systems. And so in thinking about what we're trying to do, which is trying to get native biocrusts to be restored in this Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico, we wanted to think of the two, or focus on the two things that might be the most limiting within the system. And we thought that those might be propagule limitation and the continued disturbance of soil erosion that's happening. Limiting resources, though, is something we may need to consider thinking about within the future. And so how do we overcome these problems and incorporate biocrusts into dryland restoration and soil stabilization efforts? Well, to address the idea of propagule limitation, we can actually grow biocrusts and redistribute it into the landscape. I know I said biocrusts can take a long time to grow in the natural setting, but in a greenhouse setting where you give them all of these great conditions to grow, and you can actually grow full communities of biocrusts within 4 months, in a greenhouse setting. And these pictures on the bottom are the biocrusts that we were able to grow in our greenhouse from native collected Bandelier biocrusts. And really you can see the cyanobacterial filaments. You can see how long they are in this picture. And what they're really doing is you can imagine how putting them back in the field can create a lot of stability by aggregating the soil and holding the soil in place. Okay, so maybe if we overcome the problem of propagule limitation, we can think about how to overcome the problem of continued disturbance. And to do that, we can perform habitat amelioration techniques to modify the habitat and make it more suitable for biocrust growth. So in our system, if the problem is continued soil erosion, we can combine biocrust inoculum with other soil stabilization techniques to try and get biocrust to effectively grow. And this is exactly what we did in this system. So we put out pieces of slash, and then we put out slash is just pieces of branches cut down and placed over the soil surface to work as a barrier. We put out flashing, which to see if maybe if we halted overland flow, we could get biocrusts to take within the system. And we also put out seeds with the idea that we don't just want this to be a biocrusted area. We want it to be a full ecosystem that's functioning in all the ways that it's functioning and that's holding the soil down in place. So we put these out on the mesa tops in Bandelier National Monument in six different blocks around the mesa top in a full factorial design. So we had every combination of these treatments out there. And we did a split plot where we inoculated half the plot in that picture in the middle. You can see the red is our inoculum. And then we left another plot uninoculated. And to talk about, it's important to talk about the timing that we did these things because it becomes important in the story of what ended up happening within the system. And so we put our initial plots out in May 2015, and then in July we added our inoculum. We added it right before the monsoonal rains that occur in this system that you can see in this graph of the average monthly precipitation over time. And so July we added our inoculum to take advantage of the rain that's going to fall so that the biocrests could have the rain necessarily potentially to grow. In October, after the monsoons, we collected our first round of post-treatment data, and then a year later in May, our final round of post-treatment data. And just to note that this is actually a timeline with which biocrest growth has been successful in different systems. So this is a reasonable amount of timeline to expect to see results from biocrest growing. And also, I just want to note, too, that in these rains, if you're unfamiliar with the monsoons of the Southwest, it's not a gentle rain that's coming down. It is fierce, it is fast, it is intense rain. So that's something to think about in this system. And so our results, what did we see? Well, we saw no biocrest growth at all 11 months after we applied our initial inoculum. We saw no increase in soil stability related to our treatments of slashing, or seeding. But what we did see were large seasonal changes in soil quality and stability unrelated to our treatments, which taught us that this is actually a very dynamic system. And this part is what I want to explore in thinking about why potentially our restoration efforts didn't work. And so just to delve into the data a little bit, here we have metrics of biocrest growth. We measured chlorophyll content within the soil. And so here we have our time and the amount of chlorophyll content, and then over our six blocks throughout the landscape on the mesa tops. And what I really want to note here is that this isn't taking into account any of our treatments because there were no treatment effects in any way. So we pooled all of our data for chlorophyll content across the whole site. And what we saw in the site level pooling was that there are these spatial and temporal changes in background chlorophyll levels within the system that we don't understand and aren't related to any treatments that we're doing. And so this is telling us that there are these big seasonal variations that we don't understand that are occurring within this system. And that could be a key in helping us, okay, we lost the lights. That could be helping us figure out what's going on in our region. In looking at our different metrics of soil stability, we saw actually a decrease in soil compressive strength over time. Again, these are pooled results, regardless of our treatments, suggesting across our different blocks in our some soil compressive strength, you can see that it decreased, suggesting that there are, again, these big seasonal changes that we don't really understand within the system, potentially causing the cycle of erosion that biocrest inoculation has not overcome. Also, interestingly, soil aggregate stability, we didn't really see any big changes in that, but the soil aggregate levels, six is the highest you can get, and so our levels are actually quite high for system experiencing the kind of erosion that we're seeing, and so this is maybe suggesting that our metrics of measuring stability are not appropriate for this system. And so in thinking again about our roadmap of how we get biocrest recovery, if we remove disturbance and potentially add propagule back into the system, we might be able to get biocrest recovery. But I think what we really need to ask is, did we really remove the disturbance? And I want to explore this a little bit more. Here is a graph, again, that on the top is showing our rainfall over months of the year, our average rainfall. In the middle, you see the average highs and lows within the system. And then on the bottom, what you see is what we ended up seeing. The major change in ground cover was not growth of biological soil crust, but the formation of a physical crust within the system. And you'll note that in May, when we first sampled, there was no physical crust. But then in October, we saw a huge increase in physical crust cover, which then again disappeared by next May. And so a physical crust, for those of you who don't know, is not a biological in any way. It's a compaction crust formed by, in our case, potentially rain splash. And what you can see is that in our first May sampling, it happened right after the winter. And then our October sampling happened right after these intense monsoons, which presumably actually caused the physical crust in these bare inner canopy soils. And then when we came back in May, that crust was gone, which potentially we can contribute to the fact that we saw freezing temperatures throughout the winter and well above freezing temperatures throughout the day, which would create a freeze-thaw action in the soil, maybe breaking up that physical crust and causing us to not see it when we came back again. And so this is all to point out that biological soil crusts are small organisms that are, these are going to be major disturbances for these organisms. So potentially these large seasonal changes are what is not allowing growth to occur within our system. And so potentially we really didn't remove disturbance because we were still seeing this seasonal variability and this seasonal soil movement that we weren't expecting. And so it's potential that that is the reason that our biocrust recovery did not take place. A second thing to think about is that in looking back at the data that we collected, actually we had incredibly low levels of nitrogen and phosphorus within the soil, order of magnitude lower than you would expect to see in a similar system. And so we would maybe really need to think about revisiting this idea of limiting resources. And potentially that is another barrier to biocrust recovery within the system. And so what are the future directions that we can go in to try and get biocrust to recover? Well, we've been thinking about the application of dew plots to reduce rainfall intensity, so potentially putting out some kind of barrier over our plots that would reduce the intensity of the rain that falls within the monsoonal season, which would still allow water to get through, but maybe decrease the intensity, could help in our recovery efforts. We can also think about applying fertilizer to address this lack of nutrients that we've seen in the system and give biocrust a chance to grow. And I think it's also really important to think about the timing of applying inoculum. As I said, we put it out right before the monsoons to try and capture the rain that the monsoons gave. But maybe we thought about water in the wrong way. Maybe we need to think about applying inoculum before the winter, where snow and then gentle snow melt is actually going to give biocrust the water that they need instead of the intensity of the monsoonal rain. And so this is all just to say that really, again, our goal is to take a system that doesn't have a lot of ground cover and is actively eroding and turn it back into a fully functional system, not just have biocrust recovery, but have full system recovery so it can provide all of the services back into the ecosystem, and we hope to do that in the future. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions. Any questions for Christina?
You said it's a centimeter loss every decade. Is that net loss of soil?
Yeah.
Another question. What kind of was this cyanobacterial dominated crust that you tried to inoculate?
We collected crusts from the surrounding area, and so we collected actually late successional crusts, with the idea being that if we could bring all the players, not just early successional cyanobacteria, but all of the players that may be missing from the system back, that we could get crusts to grow. So it was lichens, mosses, cyanobacteria, and algae within the inoculum.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks.